This is a KUNV Studios original program.
You're listening to Special Programming, brought to you by itswhereiam.com. The content of this program does not reflect the views or opinions of 91.5 Jazz and More, University of Nevada, Las Vegas, or the Board of Regents of the Nevada System of Higher Education.
Good morning, Las Vegas. This is Dr. G, and you are listening to It's Where I Am on 91.5 FM KUNV. I am guest hosting for Zandra Pollard, who continues to enjoy a much-needed respite after being on the air for 4 years. If you are missing Zandra, you don't have to miss her too hard, as she will be back full-time in June. I'm Dr. David Jenness, Clinical and PR Director from Great Mind Counseling and Wellness Center, and on It's Where I Am, I have been spotlighting different mental health programs throughout the state of Nevada. My goal is to decrease stigma for accessing mental health resources and extending a hand to ask for help when needed. On this morning's show, I would like to welcome back psychiatrist Dr. Deepa Hasija from Satori Behavioral Health. Good morning, Dr. Hasija. Nice to have you back on It's Where I Am.
Thank you, David. Good morning, Las Vegas. I am so happy to be invited back. I'm ready to help David, Dr. G, with any questions or anyone else.
Dr. Hasija is a fan of the show, and we and Zandra really value and respect Dr. Hasija. So Zandra last year put together a women's empowerment conference, and Dr. Hasija was one of the women that was chosen to speak on the panel at this Women's Empowerment Conference that was held on site at UNLV. So Dr. Hasija is a big fan of the show, It's Where I Am. And so I'm just delighted to welcome her back on and to utilize her brain to ask her lots of questions, I hope, that will make parents, guardians, feel more comfortable accessing psychiatry for their child or adolescent. So, Dr. Hasija, many parents and guardians have concerns about having their child take psychotropic medications. So my aim this morning in bringing you back onto the show is to hopefully provide clarifying information for caregivers of children to take into consideration when they may be determining if psychotropic medication may help their child. So, you know, I've experienced that many parents, when they are first approached with considering having their child prescribed medication, one of their first responses or concerns, rather, is if the family has addiction within their family system, is their child at risk of becoming addicted to the medication that could be prescribed?
So, David, yes, that's a very good question. And as a parent, I totally understand that concern. For any parent wanting to know, is a medication option right for my child? When they come to child psychiatry, I know most parents fear that a child psychiatrist will automatically start them on medication. And that's definitely not the case. We actually, you know, evaluate the child first. And most of the time, our first option is therapy. And if a child fails therapy and other behavioral modifications don't work, then we consider medications at that point. But even then, we would look into sleep first. We would look into environmental factors before we decide, okay, medication is the way to go. So there's a lot of education behind it, a lot of background information that is gained. So we're not starting a child on medication if they absolutely don't need to be on it. Because as a parent, I would not like my child to be on medication if they didn't need to be on it.
I really appreciate, Dr. Hasija, that you take that approach in how you treat young children and adolescents, and that you're coming from a perspective of what is the least restrictive level of care or the least restrictive services that you can recommend first in treating a child or adolescent. And, you know, being a parent myself, you know, I appreciate the fact that, you know, you're really looking at the larger picture and taking everything into consideration as far as what changes potentially or what supports the family may need in really wrapping the child with the most appropriate interventions. Dr. Hasija, if you don't mind, could you give a very simple layman's overview of the brain and talk a little bit about how psychotropic medication works and how it, you know, impacts the brain?
So, David, it really depends on which psychotropic medication that is chosen for that specific patient. But during a full assessment, a psychiatrist will go over the symptoms first. And based on the symptoms, we come to a conclusion, okay, this is depression, this is purely anxiety, this may be a mixture of both, this may be ADHD. According to that, we can prescribe medication that can target the chemical imbalance if the child has that.
Okay, so let's say then that, you know, it is determined that potentially the use of psychotropic medication could benefit a child or adolescent. And let's say, you know, that the team, the parents made the decision, okay, we think we're ready to move forward with utilizing this additional intervention, also in addition to utilizing therapy. You know, so when I go visit my PCP, sometimes, Dr. Hasija, I might be ordered additional exams that I have to go and complete prior to starting a new intervention. Is there anything that a parent or caregiver may anticipate that after maybe the recommendation of utilizing psychotropic medication is recommended, is there other things that, you know, maybe that they may have to follow up on?
Yes, absolutely, Dr. G. So most of the time we do get blood work. And the reason we do that is there's a lot of medical issues that can also present as psychiatric issues. So we want to make sure a medical issue is not causing something like that. For example, thyroid conditions can present as severe depression and anxiety, or even a person becomes more hyperactive and it could be a thyroid issue. We don't know. So a medical exam, medical blood work, review of that blood work is very important.
Okay, so
before starting the psychotropic.
And then is it routine as well that potentially sometimes an EKG might be ordered prior to starting a new medication?
Yes, I especially get an EKG for patients if I'm considering an ADHD medication, especially if that medication is going to be a stimulant medication. We want to make sure we get a thorough history of the family, history of any cardiac issues, any kind of arrhythmias, and we definitely get an EKG on the patient to make sure there's nothing going on that would worsen if they were started on a stimulant.
Okay, so let's. I'm going to stick with this scenario that you have kind of started for me, Dr. Hasija. So let's say we have a child or an adolescent that is presenting with some concentration challenges, maybe with some impulsivity, and this child or adolescent and family are already participating in therapy, and the therapist recommends to the parents, the caregivers, that, you know, I think maybe it's time for us to consider meeting with the psychiatrist just to have another pair of eyes and to access another lens in understanding the needs of the child and the family. And so this family is then referred to meet with either a primary care physician or hopefully can be connected through their insurance with a psychiatrist that has training in providing the psychiatric oversight for a young child or an adolescent. And so let's say, you know, this child or adolescent comes to you. You know, they're coming to you with some presentation, some observation of symptomatology related to ADHD. What assistance from the primary therapist that's working with the child or the family and or the family that might help you, Dr. Hasija, to feel comfortable first in acknowledging the diagnosis of ADD and then helping and assisting you to confirm the diagnosis of ADD?
So I really would like the therapist evaluation as well to see what symptoms they are seeing. If the patient is very hyperactive or cannot sustain attention, they're being taught in something in therapy, but the focus is off, so they're barely even learning the skills that are being taught to them in therapy. So if this has been going on for a while and we've gotten blood work and there's no issues medically, and the parents are open to starting a medication, then I would definitely go over, you know, Vanderbilt testing that they may have done at home or at school. We can refer them for Connors testing for ADHD. The therapist's input is very important as well. And after that, I would explain to the parent the different options, the stimulant medication versus a non-stimulant medication for their kid, and explain why each one works differently and why it may be better suited in some conditions for one parent versus not suited well for someone else.
Very good. And so a big takeaway from what you just shared, Dr. Hasija, and I think this is important for caregivers, for parents to hold in mind, is the collaboration between the family therapist, the child's therapist, and the psychiatric provider. That is really key to hopefully better understanding the child and the family's needs, and whereas there are some opportunities to provide further support within the system so that the child and the family may move forward in a positive way. Sometimes I find that parents are a little reluctant, I think that's the word I want to use, in having the therapist and the MD talk to one another. And I find, though, that that's so essential and so important.
I agree with that as well. I think that it does make a difference, you know, to make the parent comfortable and also have both providers kind of collaborate and discuss.
Well, and I think, you know, it's bringing together different lenses and really working towards the same goal, though, as far as understanding how best to support the child and the family. Now, let's just say, Dr. Hasija, that I'm the treating therapist and I recommend to a caregiver that I do believe it may benefit their child having a psychiatric evaluation with you at Satori Behavioral Health. So let's say, you know, the family reaches out, confirms, you know, that you're contracted with their insurance, schedules an appointment through your scheduling system, and they see you for the first time. So they see you for the first time where you're formally completing the psychiatric evaluation. So what can they anticipate then after the initial visit with you?
Well, after the initial visit, they will expect, you know, to get me back the medical blood work. I will collaborate with the therapist, and then I'll make the recommendation. I'll explain the different types of medications. We often start at the lowest dose if that's what's needed and important. And we also get feedback from the therapist after they started on the medication to see if there's any improvement, and also feedback from the teachers, how they're doing better in class. Are they able to focus back again? How many disruptions are they having throughout the day?
Okay, so
kind of question.
Okay, very good. So let's say, though, like the family came in and they met with you and then they left. They had the blood work completed. Let's say, just working with the scenario that we've been talking about, that the child is presenting with typical ADHD presentation. So you order an EKG, the EKG is done, the results are sent back to you as the referring psychiatrist. Now, then at that point, does the family come back into your office to review the results and to discuss with you the recommendations?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so then at that point, say the parent agrees, like, okay, this is a thorough job as far as the clinical makeup of what you're determining is the recommendation, and they decide to move forward with starting their child on a specific medication. So then the child starts the medication, you know, I'm going to say realistically, maybe within a week from when they come in and agree that this is the treatment plan, this is how we're going to all move forward. What would be next? Is it another like 30 days before they follow up to see you? Like what can caregivers kind of anticipate?
It depends on the situation. If it's something very extreme that we're concerned about, we would follow up sooner, maybe even a week or so. And if it's something that's less concerning, you know, a month follow-up would be reasonable.
Okay. All right. Very good. And so let's say, though, because I think I'm really interested in hearing clarification from you, and I think our parents who are listening this morning may also have a similar interest in understanding what is the difference. You commented on potentially for someone that struggles with concentration and impulsivity challenges, and if we are looking at a diagnosis of what is from the DSM-5 today, so it would be ADD potentially, what we'd refer to from the DSM-4 combined type. What's the difference between a stimulant and non-stimulant medication?
So a stimulant medication is something that works very quickly, within a few hours, but it's also out of your system fairly quickly. So if we started someone on it, we could potentially know, hey, this is working for this child right away, and it's very effective. And the days that they don't need to use it, for example, the weekend, they don't want their child on a medication. It's very easy to do. Some of them don't take medication on weekends. They take it primarily for school as needed. For other children that are started on non-stimulants, it may take some time to work, but it's just as effective. And it may be used for children who have an issue with their heart or they have a abnormal EKG. So a stimulant really should not be used for them.
Okay, so great differentiation in helping me better understand how the stimulant versus non-stimulant medication works for the diagnosis of ADD. So I'm going to stick with the stimulant medication for a moment. What are some side effects that caregivers, that parents may anticipate for a child that is prescribed a stimulant medication?
A lot of them do report headaches, tummy aches, loss of appetite with the stimulant medication. Long-term studies show there might be a height difference if this child is taking this medication for a long period of time. And from what the studies show, it's approximately half an inch to a full inch, a height change maybe there for some people. It's not for everybody, but that is something that is discussed. So those are some of the things to look out for with stimulant medication. Some patients have worsening of tics if they're on the stimulant medication. So we do look out for that.
And Dr. Hasija, can you describe for our listeners, please, what's an example of a tic?
Tic is abnormal movement, like a child is just sitting there and will just start blinking excessively, and that wasn't there before. Or maybe the child had a minor issue with it, and now they're doing it even more often.
Okay, and so that is correlated to potentially the stimulant medication that the child's taking to help them manage their ADD symptoms.
Yeah, yes, correct.
All right, so let's say, you know, we have an adolescent who is taking a stimulant medication for ADD, and he's on a sports team. And the family is out as a family participating and cheering him on at his sporting event, and they forget to bring his medication, so he misses a dose of the medication. What is something that the family may need to be mindful of because they missed a dose of administering the medication to their adolescent? And then, like, how should they get back on track? What are your recommendations?
So if it's a stimulant medication and it was due in the morning and the match is in the afternoon, I would not recommend giving it to the patient right before the match. You know, I would just start the next morning again, because you don't want to give it in the middle of the day and then the child is awake at night.
Okay.
So it just depends on when the medication was missed. Sometimes the stimulants are dosed twice, once in the morning, once in the afternoon. It just depends on how long it lasts for that particular patient.
Okay, so your recommendation is to, you know, take into consideration what is the usual time when the medication would be administered. You know, look at what time of day it is and what's happening in the child or adolescent's life, and then most likely wait until the next dosing time or period to continue taking the medication.
Yes, and I would definitely, to any parent, say, you know, write down all these questions, because when you go to a provider, most of them, you know, they forget the question when they're there. And these are important questions, so I would definitely write them down before they have a visit.
So one of the factors that I appreciate you highlighting earlier on in our discussion this morning, Dr. Hasija, is that when you are meeting with a child or adolescent and family for the first time, that you are not necessarily intending on recommending the use of medication or psychotropic medication, and that really you're just collecting information to make a diagnostic impression of the child's needs. And so what are some other interventions? Let's say that, you know, the family's coming to you because they feel like maybe they would like to discuss utilizing medication in the future, but they're just not there yet. in terms of jumping on that bandwagon, and maybe the child is not there yet in terms of the need for the child to start medication. What are some other interventions that you might recommend to families?
So I think the diagnostic impression is important, and discussing what, you know, possibly this diagnosis is. There might be also some referrals, like referral to therapy or referral to speech therapy or occupational therapy, to see what's needed. I would have them start those assessments, you know, get them sorted out. Maybe even watch videos or use the internet to see what other parents have said about starting medications versus not. And go to some support groups and see what other parents say before they decide, okay, I want to try it. And I always tell parents, you can try it. If you don't like it, there's no force behind it. You just see how it works. You may feel comfortable, you won't, you know?
Yeah, I really, I like what you are encouraging other parents and caregivers to reach out to other parents who have children that may have used stimulant or non-stimulant medication, and ask questions in regards to how those medications may have impacted the other parent's child, so that they can become more comfortable with the thought of utilizing medication as an intervention to help support their child in thriving in their different environments. Part of, you know, me wanting to welcome you back onto the show, Dr. Asija, is really to hopefully further reduce the stigma associated with the utilization of psychotropic medication with children and adolescents. In my 24 years of working as a therapist and training many other therapists who have worked with many children and their families, I have found that the addition of medication can be helpful, and in ways in which I've seen it be of assistance in the therapy process is that you mentioned prior that some children who have difficulty really being able to focus and to concentrate and sustain a certain level of focus so that they can learn new skills and then practice new skills, sometimes without the use of medication can be very, very challenging. And so it's up to the therapist to really be creative in how to stimulate the child where, you know, we can get maybe 5 minutes worth of sustained concentration, where we can actually work on some skill building for a short period of time while they're in the therapy office with the provider. So, you know, I'm really hoping that through this conversation that parents, guardians feel a little bit more comfortable and at least feel comfortable in asking more questions about the use of medication and supporting their young loved one in moving forward in a more positive way where they can experience increased success in their school environment, potentially in fostering and building healthy friendships within their peer group, and experiencing success in their different extracurricular activities. Anything else you'd like to say, Dr. Asija, before we end this morning's show?
I am very happy that I was part of this show again. I appreciate you having me on, and I'm happy to provide more material to our listeners.
Yeah, so again, thank you so much for being a support to It's Where I Am. And if any of our listeners are interested in reaching out to Satori Behavioral Health, is there a preferred way in which they may reach out to you if they'd like to have more contact with you and if they have more questions?
Yes, you can Google us, and it's Satori Behavioral Health, and the phone number is 702-780-6 1-800-273-2200, or you can even email us at info@satori.com.
Very good. And as always, we appreciate you supporting It's Where I Am. And I'm Dr. G, Great Mind Counseling and Wellness Center, Clinical and Public Relations Director. Until next week, have a great morning.